The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns, Gear, and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgarin.com/rain.
Good news, bad news. All those spam and text calls you've been getting lately? Well, that's a result of your information having been sold by third-party data brokerages, or it's been stolen and sold to nefarious people. Ticketmaster recently had a data breach where 560 million users' information was stolen and sold on the dark web. This included their names, physical addresses, email addresses, credit card information, and much more. Best case scenario, this just ends with more annoying phone calls and text messages. Worst case, it's going to end in fraud and you're really going to be in the hurt locker. That's why I've been using a service called Aurora for over a year now. I've talked about it on the podcast before, but not only do they monitor the dark web and the internet for my information in case it is involved in a breach, they go right to work removing your information from these data brokerages. When I signed up, they identified over 60 that had my information and went right to work removing me from these data brokerages. Now, yep, you could do this yourself, but each one of these data brokerages has its own policies and procedures, and I have no idea how you would even start trying to remove yourself from these services, let alone how much time that would take. But Aurora does that, as well as they offer a whole suite of tools to keep you safe, including a VPN, antivirus, password management, parental controls, and identity theft insurance. You get this all in one app, one place, so it's super simple. And you can do this with a 14-day risk-free trial. Super simple. And if you don't like it, you just cancel anytime. It's not complicated. At a minimum, you can take a look and see what information of yours is out there lurking on the web right now. Use the link down below in the description or go to aurora.com/afterburn and you get 14 days risk-free, cancel anytime, super easy, and take the first step in protecting yourself out there on the interwebs. That's the good news, by the way.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Sir, thanks for joining me on the podcast. I know the listeners, viewers are really going to be interested in hearing what you have to say. It's a little bit of a different venture for the normal podcast theme here, but I think it's really important that we talk about this and continue to bring awareness. But a little bit about your background. Nuclear engineer by trade, over 40 years with industrial instrumentation and control systems and automation. You're managing partner at Applied Control Systems Solutions. And then ICS Cybersecurity Pioneer, keynote speakers. You've spoken both at the Naval Postgraduate School, the Air Force, Air Command and Staff College down in Maxwell, numerous other military type audiences out there, all talking about industrial control systems, cyber, and I'm sure a few more topics, but we're going to focus a little bit on the industrial control systems today. And I think what did I miss that's important for your bio there? Because I know there's a few more things.
And basically, I'm, like I said, an instrumentation and control system engineer. So that basically crosses pretty much all lines in both private industry, government, defense. It's kind of generic.
Well, with that being generic, will you kind of give me the broad brush for those who are listening? What is an industrial control system? What are these control systems?
Okay. A control system is anything that monitors or controls a physical process. So you think of your body. You have internal to your body a control system that controls your blood pressure, your temperature, etc. When it talks about instrumentation, that's your eye, ears, nose, toes. It's the sensing of things that then go to, if you will, the central processing unit, which is the brain, and it does things. Well, that's what happens in, if you will, the mechanical field, or electrical field. You sense temperature or pressure or flow or voltage or current or something like that. And that sensing then goes to, if you will, a computing system that is programmed to say, what do I want to do? Do I want to keep the temperature steady at 70 degrees? If so, if my temperature says it's dropping below 70, I got to do something to bring it up. If it's above 70, I got to do something to bring it down. Another way of looking at it is basically your speed control on your car. It's sensing speed and adjusting, the speed to meet what's called its set point, where you want to be. I'm sure you have the same things on your airplanes, okay? So all it's doing, to call it, it's the invisible visible, because it's everywhere, but you don't see it.
And when you say it's everywhere, these control systems, again, where would we typically find control systems? And then,
Well,
where would we find them?
okay, I'm going to start from, in a funny sense, where you wouldn't think to where you would think.
Okay.
You have control systems in your sprinkler system at home. If you've got an automatic sprinkler system, you have a control system to turn it on, to turn it off. You have your furnace. That's a control system. It has a temperature input, and the furnace goes up and down to meet that temperature. Okay, your ovens, etc. Now, on a grander scale, in a sense where I work in quote unquote industrial or manufacturing, you have a power plant where you have a very large turbine, and you're monitoring the temperatures and flows and the speed and the output of the turbine and the generator. In an electric substation, you're monitoring the voltages and currents and temperatures, etc. Both not only from the wires but going into transformers, so that where you generate your electricity at a plant of any sort, it has to be boosted up to a higher voltage in order to send it on wires, 500 miles away or 1,000 miles away. So it takes the voltage that's generated, and by the way, that can be generated by solar cells, by wind, by nuclear, by coal, by hydro, doesn't matter. It's generating voltage, gets boosted, goes along the wires. You lose some of that voltage along the way because of losses like, friction or temperature. And so it has all of these substations along the way to reboost the voltage until it gets to what's called a distribution center or distribution substation, where it's going to take that very, very high voltage and drop it down so it could be used by the customer, whether it's, for example, your Air Force base, a house, where you're going to drop it down to 110 or 220 or maybe, whatever. If it's larger. You may be at 440, you know, volts, whatever. But you're taking something that is starting at, let's say, 500,000 volts and having to drop it down eventually to 110 or 220. And all along the way, you have all of these control systems monitoring these different physical parameters, you know, like I say, temperature, voltage, current, you know, if you've got fluid in a transformer, it's monitoring the transformer fluid, etc. It's simply making sure that all of the electrical and mechanical components are working as they should. And where all of this comes to play is that where all of this used to be electromechanical, and you really couldn't do anything without taking a screwdriver to it, we now have, in a funny sense, automated all of this so that rather than taking a screwdriver, you could take a keypad or, you know, your cell phone or whatever and do the same thing. And unfortunately, if it's done remotely, if you can do it, somebody else can do it. And you may or may not have heard this, but when these control systems were designed, and in fact, what's worse, even our design, security wasn't really a priority. Reliability, availability, and safety were the priorities. And so we're having to live with pretty much everything we have because security was never a fundamental criteria in the design process.
Because the design, again, was for an engineer or someone to be monitoring at a remote location what X, Y, or Z control system was doing. They were monitoring pressure, they were monitoring voltage, making sure the machine was doing what the machine should be doing.
And
that's where I think we're going to get to in the crux of this conversation, and it circles around vulnerabilities and what people can do to exploit those vulnerabilities.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. When I first got into cyber in 2000, prior to that, everything I ever did was dealing with simply the reliability, availability, and safety of these systems. Just never thought about cyber. I mean,
right.
When we started, it was like, who would ever want to, if you will, hack a power plant? There's no money there. You know, who'd want to hack a water system or anything else? It was, where are you going to hack? A bank.
Right. You know, there's nothing sexy about a water plant. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, whatever. But it was the concept that somebody would want to harm something that was, if you will, a physical necessity and had, quote unquote, no money associated with it. Why were we looking?
Yeah, it's an interesting take on it. And obviously in the 2000s, like the internet really is coming of age and the accessibility across the globe, et cetera. So this problem is just growing. If we back up to your example earlier with the power plant, I know you can't give me an exact number, but I'm envisioning that if we have a turbine that is generating power and it's generating, you know, hundreds of thousands of volts that's being pumped thousands of miles between the power generation and the end user, such as me or you sitting at your house at 110 volts, there are probably thousands of control devices between the turbine management, the substations. Is that a true or accurate statement, would you say?
Yeah, it's, you know, again, in that rough order. And,
okay,
you know, you'll have all kinds of control systems in the production facility. In fact, I'll give you an idea of just how many it could be. And this will be one, I think, that will surprise you because It's not where you're thinking of a big nuclear plant or a coal plant or whatever. I had to do a walk down of two utility scale solar facilities. You know, these are your, you know, solar panels, da 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 da. And it turns out one of the two was approximately 150 megawatts. So it was the size of a small coal-fired power plant.
Okay.
Want to take a guess about how many panels, solar panels, were in that facility?
I have no idea, but I'm guessing it's got to be thousands and tens of thousands. I don't know. Yeah. No idea.
2 million.
I was way off. Okay.
But the point being, every single solar panel had a sensor and an inverter. Okay. And then each bank of 16 or so had a small programmable logic controller to adjust the angle of the solar cells to try to catch, if you will, the maximum amount of sunlight.
Okay.
And then all of that was then sent to a transformer to boost, say, this 32,500 volts, kilovolts, coming from these, say, 2 million panels, up to, in this case, 230,000 volts to put on the transmission grid. So you start looking at how big is this? And then meanwhile, you have a SCADA system, which stands for Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition. So you have this SCADA system monitoring all of this going on. So everything you're talking about is in this case, was in one, you know, large geographic area, but in one location. And then I ended up having to go to a second solar facility. It was smaller. It was only like 75 megawatts. It had a couple of 100,000 panels. And what gets more concerning today, given our, if you will, issues with certain adversarial countries, there's probably a very good chance that a lot of those panels and inverters and sensors came from China.
And that's kind of where we go with this. So you just painted the picture of two, you know, microcosms of solar farms, which, I mean, again, I would undoubtedly envision would impact millions of U.S. citizens, providing them power and doing their daily lives. And in between the generation of the power and them getting, you know, power at 110 volts in their house, hundreds of thousands of control devices.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is just at the generation. And once that transformer, that what's called a step up transformer, because it's taking the 32,000 volts and stepping it up or boosting it to 230,000 volts. And by the way, this is on the California transmission grid. So it's basically boosting it up, putting it on the transmission grid, basically in this case, sending it, oh, I don't know, 100 and some odd miles to Los Angeles. So you now have on that path a number of transformers along the way to reboost up that 230,000 as it drops a little bit because of losses, to try to maintain the 230,000 until it gets to, if you will, the distribution substation, where it'll drop the 230,000 down to, say, 110,000, down to, you know, 62, you know, et cetera, all the way down. So you've got this whole daisy chain of systems all to take the power generated by a whole bunch of solar panels, in this case in the Mojave Desert. And, you know, given your background, it happens to be near, in this case, Edwards Air Force Base. And sending it all the way down eventually to Los Angeles. And think about, this is just one path. Right. You have power coming in this case, say, for example, from the Palo Verde nuclear plant in Arizona that's going on a different path off to LA. You know, the power could have just as easily, instead of being sent to LA, could have been sent up to the Bay Area or north, in other words, you know, instead of south. So look at the complexity, starting with a bunch of solar panels like you would have on your roof.
And if you're able to get into, I mean, all these points, the thousands of control devices have vulnerabilities or could be exposed to vulnerabilities,
yes,
and manipulated where you could sabotage them and then, yes, thus creating, I would say, a catastrophe.
Yeah. And here's the other thing too. I wanted to explain, what is a cyber incident? Just so you have an idea, because I worry not only about the hacker in China, Russia, or Iran, North Korea, whatever. I also worry about the engineer or technician who basically inadvertently pushes the wrong button or does something, you know, sets the wrong setting, you know, puts a, you know, instead of having a backspace, or, you know, where you have your, you know, slash or going this way, it goes this way. There's any number of reasons. What's so important is just to realize, are the systems doing what they're supposed to be doing? So again, I wanted to kind of start with this. What's a cyber incident? If you're in IT, a cyber incident is you're connected to the internet, you're running Windows, and somebody is trying to steal or compromise your data. Okay? And it's all about data. And implicitly, it's all about malicious. What a cyber incident is electronic communication between systems or systems and people, your displays. Okay, you could think about it in your cockpit, or I think about it, you know, in a control room or whatever. The operator is looking at all of these, if you will, dials or gauges or displays. Okay, and a cyber incident is a quote-unquote compromise that can be malicious or unintentional of either confidentiality, integrity, or availability. Now, it's missing, to me, the most important letter, because this is what the IT world worries about. What I worry about, the most important letter that's missing, is the letter S for safety. IT can't kill anybody, but engineers can. Okay? Where I'm coming from is, and this is what makes life so difficult in where I live, because who is basically running cybersecurity? The IT people. They are only, and I use the word only very strongly, they are only worried about the data and the integrity of data. They are not worried at all about the physical impacts, which means they don't care if a valve is open or if a train track is off or if, you know, a boiler is overheating. The only thing they care about is the data. Are the packets looking okay, coming from the right place, but up, but up, but up. The fact that you could be overheating something or basically starving a process by letting the all of the water boil away is irrelevant, because that has nothing to do, the packets don't see that. And so what's happening, and this is where we have this huge problem today throughout, if you will, all of our critical infrastructures, are the people that are in charge of cybersecurity are the network security people. And who's in charge? What's called a chief information security officer. And this chief information security officer doesn't own a single piece of equipment. That person, whether it's a he or she, has no idea what a pump is or if the pump is working. The problem today is they're being tasked or being in charge of the cybersecurity of that equipment. They don't even know what that equipment is.
You know, to paint this picture, I think it'd be good if you talked about Stuxnet, because that one is something that people can easily find out there, and then we can talk about some more recent ones.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about Stuxnet, you can see where control devices are really important. Everyone has heard about Colonial Pipeline. You hear about ransom attacks holding your data, but you don't hear a lot about things like Stuxnet, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm going to go through Stuxnet in a number of ways. And I'm going to ask you, just so I don't forget, remind me if I don't say, I gave a presentation at what was called Cyber Endeavor at the Naval Postgrad School in Monterey. And I was asked about that. So please, if I don't recall, because I want to take you through Stuxnet and also why it was so difficult to detect and everything else, okay? Prior to Stuxnet, and Stuxnet was in the 2009-10 timeframe, all of the cyber incidents were, in a funny sense, I'll say obvious that they were cyber incidents, with one exception. And I'm going to go back through that, and then I'll take you back to Stuxnet. This was in 2000, and this was in Australia. An engineer who was working for what's called a system integrator, he was installing a SCADA system at a wastewater facility in Australia. And he was promised a job by the city. There it was called a shire, but by the city. And he quit his job, and then the city decided not to hire him. So what did he do? He had his equipment that he hadn't turned in, and what did he do? He remotely started opening sewage discharge valves. Ended up dumping more than 100,000 liters of raw sewage on the grounds of a Hyatt Regency. They caught him the 46th time he did it on a traffic stop. I'm looking at your eyes as I'm telling you this.
What?
And the point being, because to start with, it's viewed as a mechanical failure. Nobody is thinking this is cyber. And by the way, he was caught, he was convicted, spent 2 years in jail. So all of this is fully documented. Okay? Only you don't hear about it. Now, fast forward to 2008. The Siemens International User Group met in Chicago. And it turns out the Idaho National Lab was contracted by Siemens to analyze their programmable logic controllers that were used in large industrial applications. So there was roughly, 60-80 slide deck that was provided. And, oh, by the way, it was on the internet for a long time. And The last 8 to 10 slides were, why did Siemens contract Idaho to do this? And then the next couple slides identified what they found. The first one, are you familiar with what's called a demilitarized zone, a DMZ?
I am, yep.
Okay. And in this case, not in Seoul, South Korea, but I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So the first slide was talking about how you could get through the DMZ and not be found.
Well, I tell you what, explain to me the DMZ outside of Seoul, because that's the one I'm really familiar with.
Right. It would help. Okay, yeah, what the DMZ is, and it really came from what you were doing, you know, on, if you will, on the military side, was basically the separation between the IT part of the world and the control system part of the world. So the DMZ is where you had all of these firewalls to isolate, theoretically, the control systems from the IT.
Would this be something similar to like an air gap?
Yes.
Where it wouldn't, okay. Is that okay. Synonymous?
All of that was, this is why everybody kept saying, but you can't do anything because we have an air gap.
Okay.
And by the way, an air gap is actually not just a firewall. An air gap is simply saying there's no means of connectivity between one system and another system. And by the way, that's entirely, entirely wrong for control systems. It's a total misnomer.
Okay.
So anyways, what happened is in the Siemens presentation, they basically said, here's how you can essentially avoid that DMZ. Then here's how you can get to what's called the engineer's workstation. The engineer's workstation is where all of the logic is for the process. So if you get to the engineer's workstation, you could do anything. You could change the settings of the valves, the motors, the pumps, the everything else. You can change, you know, sensor reading issues, all of this. Okay. This is a very, very important, you know, device. And what was going on was they were basically showing how somebody who should not have been able to access that critical system was able to access it. Then they showed, here's how you can change the actual logic in the controller and the operator will not know. What was shown at the Siemens International User Group in August of 2008 was Stuxnet. Only in 2008, nobody knew what that was or what it meant. So here you had, this is again part of the total lack of awareness, total lack of anything else. People were told and showed exactly what you could do. In 2008, nobody had a clue what that meant. Okay, it's not like nobody knew. And like I say, that presentation was on the web for years until myself and one or two others were talking about it. That presentation is no longer there.
That's good, yeah.
Okay, now it's good, but you know, I have a friend who, you know, I do have a copy of it. There are others that did before it was removed.
I mean, yeah, the cat's out of the bag now.
The cat's out of the bag. Yeah. And I'm going to go through another case again where the cat's out of the bag. But the point being that in 2008, people were told precisely what you could do. Only in 2008, nobody had any idea what that meant. The context was totally missing. Okay, and think about things like that today.
Right.
When the Russians are doing things, or the Iranians, or the Chinese, and it isn't like things necessarily we've seen before, and so we ignore it.
That's the piece, too, is I think we've talked about on the podcast before, jumping into the warfare aspect of it. Drones in the last, you know, year and a half with Ukraine, with the Houthis, that has transformed how the battle space is. So I think applying, you know, thinking outside of the box and not limiting yourself to traditional logic is important here. Because if we look again, iPhone, right? Since 2007 or so, when that came online, how much has the world changed in 15 years? I mean, everything now runs through this, and everything seems to be more and more connected, more and more dependent upon things like this.
Yes and no. Control systems have been connected to the internet since roughly the 1999, maybe early 2000 timeframe. Nobody thinks that. If you ask anybody in the IT or quote-unquote OT world, they'll tell you, well, it just happened in 2015 or 16. Or no, not true at all. Okay. In fact, again, I'm sorry for dancing all over the map, but I wanted to go through one other thing. Have you heard the term OT?
I have not.
Okay. OT stands for operational technology. It was a term coined by Gartner because they didn't know what a control system was. So it was a way of them being able to say, we know everything about IT. This OT stuff, yeah, over there. Well, prior to that, and this, again, important point, the control system people and the IT people have never gotten along, ever. They just have different worlds, okay? And prior to Gartner coming up with the term IT or OT, an IT person would never, ever have been left alone in a control environment without being escorted. Okay. Well, what OT did, excuse me, was allowed all of these IT people to change their terminology and say, now I'm OT, and all of a sudden go to places they have no knowledge of, because control systems, at least the displays, use Windows. So they go, well, I know Windows, therefore they're coming in. They have no idea how a pump works, but they don't care, because they can see those Windows displays. Okay. Now, let me go back to Stuxnet. Okay. Phenomenal story. Number one, Stuxnet was not one attack. It was actually two. What had happened was, in order to prevent a shooting war between Iran and Israel, the attempt was to use cyber to try to halt the production of uranium, in this case hexafluoride, in other words, the uranium that would be, you know, this was going through a centrifuge to be able to enrich uranium into weapons material. And it was done using centrifuges that spin and spin and spin and spin. It's exactly what the U.S. did, you know, at Oak Ridge. Okay. And so the intent was, can we be able to remotely affect the operation of those centrifuges to cause them to fail, but not in an obvious way? Control systems are not difficult to hack, but if you don't want anybody to know there's been a hack and you do not want any, you know, attribution, that's really, really, really difficult. That's where you need a nation state. Okay. And so what was going on here was, and remember, Iran was under a quote unquote embargo. They weren't supposed to have any of this, you know, not the centrifuges, not the control systems, anything. And Natanz is buried inside a mountain. You know, when Israel just bombed Iran, you know, what was it, last week?
Yep.
where they bombed is where Natanz is. Okay? And the point being, what made this difficult, and it throws everything IT ever knew out of a cocked hat, there was no internet at Natanz.
It was air-gapped.
It was air-gapped, okay, in a sense. There was no Wi-Fi. You're inside a mountain. Theoretically, there was no way for anything to get from the outside in, which normally would be considered an air gap. Now, the next part, we don't know precisely. We just know it obviously happened. But in order to update firmware, you need to be able to bring in, you know, a USB or a floppy or something, you know, or, and often it would just be the internet, but there was no internet. So the story, though, this has never been confirmed because it's obviously classified, were USBs were brought in that basically had the Stuxnet logic in it. And additionally, it had like 5 zero days. The 0 days, you familiar with the term 0 days?
I am, but I think it'd be good to dive into
that. A 0 day basically means it's a vulnerability that nobody has ever seen before. So it's the first time. That's why they call it 0 day, because there's nothing that anybody's seen behind it, if you will. Okay. And so all of those 0 days were simply a way to get from the thumb drive through the IT system onto the control system network to get it to, if you will, the engineer's workstation and from there on out. Okay.
And from what I've read too, like a 0 day, if you find for a hacker, like 1 0 day is hitting a grand slam. 5 of them is unprecedented, correct?
Yeah, and one of the things that happened also with Stuxnet that has never happened since, okay, regardless of people want to say on the defensive side, Stuxnet was the only time where the IT people, the control system people, and the physical security people all worked seamlessly together. Because not only did they have to get it through the IT network, they also had to get the keys, okay, if you will, the computer keys, which is where the physical security people came in, where they were able to get basically from Taiwan, you know, where they were making the semiconductors, a quote-unquote key that allowed it to go in. And then you have the engineers who, again, the story goes that they got some of those what are called IR-1 centrifuges, took them to Oak Ridge. These are the ones that Iran had, so they knew exactly what to do to cause the damage. I mean, this was a phenomenally complex, neat thing as an engineer, just phenomenal, okay? And so what they were able to do is the American attack, and everything I'm telling you is public, okay? Whether people see it or know it, it's not classified. The American version was they basically compromised the pressure sensors, changed that so the pressure controller for those centrifuge tubes would increase. They then sent a signal, pressure signal, to the displays and the operator saying everything was normal. Even though what was going on with those tubes is it was being overpressurized. They also sent a signal to the safety relief system saying everything was normal. This is as slick as you can be.
Yeah, it's every aspect of it.
every aspect. And remember, this was all coming in through USBs. There was no internet, no anything else. And for over a year, Iran had no idea why their centrifuges were breaking. They could physically hear things being wrong. The Israeli version was they sped up and then slowed down the centrifuges to cause an imbalance so it would shake itself apart. Again, when this is happening, you could hear it. They're screaming. Only nobody ever thought cyber was doing it. My running joke was that Iran wasn't supposed to have these centrifuges to begin with. So they couldn't call their neighbor and ask, are you having the same problems we are with right. The equipment we're not supposed to have? So this, like I say, it shoots down so much of what IT says. There was no connection to the internet. It wasn't Windows that was the issue. It's all of these things. This was an engineering attack, okay? Now, fast forward. I was giving a presentation at Cyber Endeavor, like I say, in Monterey at Naval Postgrad. And one of the students raised his hand and basically said, and this was, I think, in maybe 2017. Remember, Stuxnet was in 2010.
Right.
And they're going, well, hasn't everybody now taken this seriously because Stuxnet occurred? And you know what my answer was? The answer was absolutely not, for two reasons. One, people were going, but I don't have a centrifuge. And number two, the U.S. isn't going to attack me. So it was this thought that nobody else had the capability to do this other than the U.S. And number two, it was unique to that, if you will, equipment. Both of those are completely and totally wrong.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I think we might have talked about on the phone prior to this. Inherently these control systems were designed, or maybe we talked earlier, like in the podcast too, it's like, designed to monitor the pressures of systems.
Yeah.
As you said, like, who would have thought you would go after this? And the Stuxnet, drawn back to the sewage, had that guy not attacked, I guess, 46 times before he got caught, maybe they would just chalked it up as mechanical failure.
If he would have stopped after three or four times, it was just this mechanical failure, what's going on? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the other really big thing about Stuxnet is before Stuxnet, it was evident what would or wouldn't be a cyber attack versus a cyber incident. A cyber incident meaning somebody hits the wrong character or does something unintentionally. Like I say, prior to Stuxnet, we thought it would be evident if it was an attack versus a mistake. What Stuxnet proved, and people to this day refuse to recognize it, is a sophisticated attacker can make a cyber attack look like an equipment malfunction. And if it's an equipment malfunction, the cyber people aren't going to care. And the engineers aren't going to look forward. I'm going to give you an example too. August 31st of last year to October 14th of last year, three major data centers shut down. Okay. All three of them because of the sensors and the cooling system, the chiller motors. In each case, it was immediately said it was a mechanical failure. And no cyber incident response was ever initiated.
Interesting. Because I jump with, you know, I didn't think about the chiller in the data center. But you want to take that out, that's a pretty easy thing. Same if you
no,
want to fight
it is not.
Well, I mean, but if you want to take out, if you don't want to fight a raptor, you overpressurize the fuel tanks or
yes.
destroy the fuel tanks, right? The
yes.
raptors aren't taking off after that. But again, if you wanted to cripple a data center,
here's the point.
Here's
the thing you need to understand. Because power is so critical. Remember, I come out of nuclear safety, so I'm familiar with all of the extra redundancy and diversity and everything else, because you keep trying to think of all of the things that can go wrong and what am I going to have as a backup, okay? Data centers, you know, these large, huge data centers are, I don't know, something like, I forget the number, maybe like $10,000 a minute for downtime. It's a number you can't even, be, okay? So all of the data centers are designed with what's called N plus one or N plus two. So it's basically saying I need N pieces of equipment to operate. I'm going to have one or two extra. Okay. So I don't just have, say, four chillers if I need four chillers. I'm going to have like five or six. I'm going to, for power, normally I've got the grid, but I also have backup batteries, I have standby diesels, and I have uninterruptible power supplies. There should be no case or reason why a data center should shut down from that because of all of the diversity and redundancy built in. So when you're talking like, you know, with the Raptor and, well, it's a data center and whatever. No, I mean, because of the expense and the cost and the impact, these things are built, you know, assuming something bad is going to happen, even if it's just a lightning strike, you know, that takes out the grid. You've got all of these other power sources because you have to shut down that multi-million or billion-dollar data center if you lose power. Not the grid. Not if you lose the grid. If you lose power, which is why you have all of these redundant power sources.
Who's looking at that? Who's responsible for that?
Well, like what just happened was, and these were three major operators of data centers. It goes back to the culture issue. They basically said it's a mechanical failure because it was the sensors and the chiller motors. Ergo, the cyber people never got involved. The engineers basically said, you know, oops, mistake. We got to figure out, you know, why this happened, why all the... There was never any attempt to connect them. And go back to 9/11. What were the two issues at 9/11? Nobody connected the dots and a lack of imagination. Everything we're talking about in control system cyber to this day including what the Russians are doing with water systems, what Iran did to the controllers in water systems and food and beverage. All of this was in the November timeframe of last year. And what the Chinese continue to do. There is a complete lack of imagination that it could be anything other than mechanical failure if it doesn't fit into the bucket of conventional cyber. And our cyber, offensive cyber people, not just in the U.S., ours, but Russia, China, Iran, but up theirs, that's where they're going. Why? Because the defenders aren't looking. As of today. And that includes all of the guidance coming from Washington. And that's both on, again, I have no clearances, so I can't tell you anything that isn't unclassified. But what's out there, even with DOD, does not address in any adequate fashion what we're talking about here to this day.
Yeah, was it Presidential Directive 63 that you sent over to me from the Clinton days, basically addressing this? And then
in 1998,
and here we are.
President Clinton issued Presidential Decision Directive 63 that said within 5 years, critical infrastructure would be secure. And then when I started or helped start the control system cyber program for the electric utilities in 2000, that's what was driving it. I mean, when we started in 2000, theoretically we had 3 years left. And here we are in 2024, almost midway. We don't have any cybersecurity to this day in anything we measure or actuate to this day.
Not good. Not good at all. Can you talk to me about Chinese cranes? This is something that, again, you sent me the...
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I'll tell you about both the cranes and the transformers, etc. In 2021, the Director of National Intelligence issued a cyber assessment. And again, it was public. Normally, you would think this defense assessment, if you will. Normally, something like that coming out of DNI would be classified. This wasn't. It was basically dealing with renewables. But in there, it said that DNI viewed Chinese transformers, inverters, and circuit breakers as being cyber vulnerable, okay, and with cyber issues. Now, this is the Director of National Intelligence putting this out in 2021. Now, in 2019, going back, and then I'm going to jump forward. A large U.S. utility, in fact, it was a DOE-operated utility, had ordered a large Chinese transformer. We're talking 400 tons worth of large.
Okay, yeah.
And when it was delivered to the site, the electrical and mechanical engineers, not cyber, electrical and mechanical engineers, found extra electronics inside that transformer. Now, this isn't the cyber people doing their games. This is stuff that was visible as they're installing the transformer. So they basically, mentioned it because it wasn't supposed to be there. Next thing we knew, in 2020, May 2020, President Trump had issued an executive order on Chinese equipment for the grid. Basically saying, don't buy anymore. But here's what was so interesting about it. In that executive order, it laid out all of the equipment that was covered. It was all of the control systems. It was all of the hardware. What was explicitly excluded in that executive order was all of the networking. Isn't that amazing?
It's interesting because
they bypassed it.
Huawei, when I feel like that's a 2020.
Yes, it's sort of concurrently. Huawei was a chip issue. This is a 400-ton large electric transformer issue. Okay, and it wasn't just chips. I mean, you couldn't see the difference between a Huawei chip and, say, an Intel or Motorola chip. This is stuff that the engineers saw.
Now, it's interesting that it was that obvious. You know, there was no attempt to...
So here's what happened. Two things, and this is not political, so this is just factual of what's going on. Number one, one of those Chinese transformers, and we're not sure where it came from, was sent to the Sandia National Laboratory to be torn apart and examined. The report that was issued on this Chinese transformer was classified as top secret. Think about that for a minute. This is a transformer you would see at your substation. And it was classified as top secret. Read between the lines, scared to death of what was found, and realize there's well over 350 large Chinese transformers in our grid today. Okay? Now, bad thing. Again, not being political. When President Biden came in, what did he do? He basically suspended all of President Trump's executive orders. This was one of them. As a result, the utilities have bought, I think, something like 125 or 150 more of those Chinese transformers since. Okay, now, fast forward to what you talked about. In February, end of February, President Biden issued an executive order on Chinese port cranes because they were finding, tell me if this sounds familiar, they were finding things in the port cranes that shouldn't have been there.
Like these are port cranes that are in our ports.
Yes, major cities. Like 80% of the port cranes in the U.S., and I'm not sure in Canada, but certainly in the U.S., are Chinese port cranes. Okay? I forget the exact number, but I think it's 80% or more. And so the concern was they had cellular modems and sensors and other things in there that shouldn't have been there, that were never, okay? So it turns out that in 2021, I have a picture of a ship, Chinese ship, on its way to the port of Baltimore with the Chinese port cranes. The dolly, the ship that hit the Key Bridge, was, quote unquote, unloaded and loaded at the dock in Baltimore by these Chinese port cranes.
And the tie here is, like, I've never been to a shipyard and seen it, but I'm imagining that between the ship and the cranes, there's obviously some interconnectability. If you're talking cellular and modems, there's ways to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other thing that's interesting that I didn't put in the blog is normally that ship would have only been in port for part of a day. That ship was there for 2 days because they were having, quote unquote, power issues. Had nothing to do with fuel because they didn't take on any fuel in Baltimore.
Interesting.
Now, I want to be clear. You know, am I saying that the Dolly was a cyber attack? I'm not saying that. Am I saying that what happened to the Dolly could, operative word, could have been caused by a cyber attack? The answer is absolutely yes.
Yeah, you know, when you start looking at all these different control devices.
You keep on going. Ship was built in South Korea. Its maintenance is now done in China. I told you DNI basically said there are issues with Chinese circuit breakers. There is a good chance, I haven't seen the details of the Dolly, I don't think anybody is going to, but there is a pretty good chance, because they're really looking at the propulsion system. And here's the other point. A ship is a power plant with rudders. A ship is also a microgrid. Everything that happens on land, what I was just talking about, how all things, that's what happens on a ship. It's just, it's not fixed. It moves. So
it's a big problem set.
Yes. And
it's almost unimaginable, just the issues, because that stem from this.
It's a Manhattan Project size issue, because our entire, and by the way, there is nothing unique about the United States. Everything we're talking about here is generic to the world. Remember, Siemens, with Stuxnet.
Right.
Siemens is a major international supplier. Siemens is Germany. Okay. And by the way, again, you realize with Stuxnet, those were Siemens controllers. Those were the exact Siemens controllers that Idaho did the assessment with. The exact same. Honeywell is here. It sells all over the world. Emerson is here, sells all over the world. ABB is Switzerland. Schneider is France. Yokogawa is Japan. They all sell all over the world. There's nothing. And by the way, and they're all major supporters of DOD.
I mean, probably the vast majority of suppliers, contractors and suppliers. And I think DOD, the fact of even their subcontractors, if they're using parts like this, really like taking a step back and looking at all this in my mind, here's the threat is the fact that warfare now can come to your doorstep. If you want to cripple a nation economically, if you want to send it into complete chaos, you can do it from a keyboard 5,000 miles away. It's no longer just kinetic effects. You're no longer firebombing a city for citizens to feel the impact. You can feel the impact with this really quickly.
I wanted to give one last thing, too. I don't know if you've seen or if your listeners have seen, but in 2007, the Idaho National Lab did a test with a generator, and you had the smoking generator from CNN. There was a CNN tape of this smoking generator. Okay. What they were able to do is take this large couple of hundred ton generator. This was a generator that was coming off the North Slope of Alaska. Okay. It was actually originally was used in tugs, tugboats. Okay. Excuse me. Strictly using bits and bytes. They were able to, with no malware at all, none, zero. Strictly using bits and bytes, they were able to totally destroy that, physically destroy that diesel generator as if you had sticks of dynamite under it. When you talk about kinetic, it is not about shutting it down. Stuxnet and Aurora were both clear and demonstrated cases where using bits and bytes, you cause real physical kinetic damage. And a lot of what it is simply allowing Mother Nature to cause the actual impacts. And when that happens, it happens almost instantaneously, and there's nothing you could do to stop it once it starts. It's very problems. Different. This is the engineering side of the world. This is not the networking side.
Yeah, you mentioned, you used to have a screwdriver to go out there and make something like this happen.
Yes.
Just get a spy onto the ship, destroy or disable. Now, again, you don't have to do that. You can do that.
You don't have to do that. And that's the fear. In fact, when we first started this in 2000, my generation, and I'm at least one or two older than you, were not raised with computers. And the comfort level with computers was very different. And we kept saying, what happens with the next generation or the next generation? I mean, forget about my kids. My grandkids are brought up with computers, with cell phones, with everything. There is zero fear of using a computer for anything. And they're brought up from 4 or 5 years old with this.
Yeah, it's part of the daily life.
And kids are curious. And kids also don't necessarily understand what is allowed and what isn't allowed. But originally, with exceptions, you had the tinkerers who were around, you look at Jobs and, Apple and whatever. But generally, it took a while for the masses to have to be taught about computers. And now it's second nature. So what years ago was a one-off and who can do it, this is not difficult. And this is very truly the poor man's atom bomb. And that's not trying to be flippant or anything else.
The accessibility, it's a $700 laptop that anyone can have and a little bit of practice, right?
A $300 or $400 cell phone. You don't even need a laptop.
Yeah, it's completely changed. I like that analogy. And unfortunately, it's terrifying in the same sense. Before we part, I do want to, you mentioned Russia and Indiana last week. Can you talk to me about that incident?
Yeah, it was on Friday. A water utility in Indiana was, again, it's a small 5,000 people thing. This is not Indianapolis or, Fort Wayne or whatever. This is small, middle of nowhere. And the Russians, again, they took pictures and whatever, tried to hack that water treatment facility. In January, they hacked a couple in Texas and basically were able to manipulate valves and whatever and overflowed, the large, water tanks that you would see. You had water gushing out.
Unless they claim, and I assume in these instances, they claim responsibility or are found some way, but as you've alluded to many times, most of this, if done, is done subtly.
Well, here's the other. In November, Iran cyber attacked not only a small water utility in Pennsylvania, and they also cyber attacked a brewery. And they had cyber attacked several others. And they left a calling card saying this was because of Gaza. It turns out what they were doing was attacking a particular brand of controller that's used in traffic control, water, food and beverage, chemicals. I can keep on going. It's a controller, just like Siemens. And the reason Iran was attacking it, that controller was made in Israel. This is a nation-state supply chain attack by Iran on the United States. And by the way, one of these cases was actually a small water utility in Ireland. Iran didn't care where. They were just going after it because it was made in Israel. So when you look at Russia with the water utilities plus, you look at China with the port cranes, the transformers, the inverters, you look at Iran with the Unitronics controllers. This is not, you know, you keep having these people say it's not if but when. We've been having when for a long time. And the question is, why are we not doing anything about it? I'm not saying offensively. I'm just saying, why aren't we doing anything to prevent this from happening?
Well, it kind of ties into my parting shot here is, what do we do about it? Can you do anything about this?
Yeah, you can. Number one, you've got to get, and I'll tell you this right now, you got to get the credit rating agencies and the insurance companies to say, if you don't do something, we're going to hammer you. You know, we're going to raise your rates or we won't insure you and your credit rating will go down, so that the board, now this is obviously not DOD, but the board basically says, I got to do something. You know, until money, ain't going to happen. DOD themselves has to realize cyber is not just IT. You know, you look at all of your, what is it, CMMC or whatever. None of that, absolutely none of that has anything to do with a control system at all. Why? Until the senior executives, whether it's in private industry, government, DOD, until the leaders recognize this importance, we're dead on arrival. Once they do, we have a shot at getting there. And it's going to have to be policies, procedures, training, and there are some technologies that exist today, but we're not going to be technologically there for at least 10 years, if not more.
Yeah, because in this too, you've alluded to IT, OT. Like, is there even the base of people who have the tools to go out and fix this?
Yeah. No. And you keep hearing there's not enough cyber people. When you keep hearing this, it isn't there are not enough control system cyber people. There are not enough IT cyber people. Well, we're even a smaller subset than that. And even universities. Cyber is taught in computer science. Very few universities require anybody in computer science to have to take an introduction to engineering. And very, 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 very few universities require anybody in engineering discipline to have to take an introduction to cybersecurity. I mean, before you realize it's a technical issue, it is a major, major cultural issue. And until you solve that, the technical issue is secondary.
Some things I'm walking away with, and I think are important. It's not the if, but when is here now.
Yes.
And this is the Manhattan Project, but again, accessible via a smartphone, a tablet, and anyone has access to it.
Yes.
Big problem set.
And here's the funny part. To the engineer, many engineers go, problem, what problem? The system is working, and it's working efficiently. It's that simple. They don't see that as a problem. They see the problem as being your email, which isn't their problem. And IT or OT, the network people go, well, I got it. I got all of these firewalls in there. What more do you want? So it's an interesting thing. Like I say, it's not your F-22, but it's everything around supporting or building that plane.
Well, you cannot lack imagination. That's the term that gets thrown out there. You threw it out there. Conflict, I think, in the next 50 years is going to look much different as we are seeing it change rapidly today.
Yeah.
Again, if I'm a rogue actor, if I'm a nation state and I want to inflict damage and pain on my enemy or my foe, this seems like a really great way and a low barrier of entry. Obviously, there's a lot of technicality and skill set that goes into making something like this happen, but there's so many vulnerability points you can hit at.
Operating a power plant, a water treatment facility, an electric grid, is done all over the world. There is nothing unique about operating an electric grid in California as opposed to Tehran. Okay? The same thing can be said about that water system or that chemical plant or that refinery. The knowledge is there because there's only so many ways of running a physical process.
Right.
I mean, you could say the same thing, with airplanes, with jet fighters. Most every country has some. Is it as advanced as ours? No. But is there enough for them to know and learn? Sure.
Absolutely.
And there is this feeling, unfortunately, by too many in Washington, that this is too complex for many other. No, it isn't.
Yeah, it seems like a great tool to have in your tool bag to go after your foe.
And not only that, there's no attribution.
Yeah, because again, most of the stuff you could chalk up, or people are going to chalk up, to a mechanical failure.
That's the point.
Yeah.
And we don't have the training.
Yeah. I appreciate you taking the time. Before we wrap up, is there anything that we missed or you think we should highlight?
Not that I can think of.
This is really, it's very interesting. It's also very terrifying. again, it's tied to every aspect of life. So hopefully people.
Yeah. I mean, the whole point is that's what control systems are for. They make cookies. They give you water. They allow you to turn your lights on. That's what this stuff does.
It also enriches uranium,
Yes.
It spans the gap. So.
Yes, it does. It's the ultimate dual use.
Yeah. Well, sir, thank you again. I appreciate you taking the time. It was a fascinating conversation. Look forward to connecting again soon.
Okay. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. The Afterburn Podcast is a proud supporter of Guns Gear and Memorial Foundation, helping our veterans and their families when they need it most. To learn more, visit gunsgarin.com/rain.
Good news, bad news. All those spam and text calls you've been getting lately? Well, that's a result of your information having been sold by third-party data brokerages, or it's been stolen and sold to nefarious people. Ticketmaster recently had a data breach where 560 million users' information was stolen and sold in the dark web. This included their names, physical addresses, email addresses, credit card information, and much more. Best case scenario, this just ends with more annoying phone calls and text messages. Worst case, it's going to end in fraud and you're really going to be in the hurt locker. That's why I've been using a service called Aurora for over a year now. I've talked about it on the podcast before. But not only do they monitor the dark web and the internet for my information in case it has evolved in a breach, they go right to work removing your information from these data brokerages. When I signed up, they identified over 60 that had my information and went right to work removing me from these data brokerages. Now, yeah, you could do this yourself, but each one of these data brokerages has its own policies and procedures, and I have no idea how you would even start trying to remove yourself from these services, let alone how much time that would take. But Aurora does that, as well as they offer a whole suite of tools to keep you safe, including a VPN, antivirus, password management, parental controls, and identity theft insurance. You get this all in one app, one place, so it's super simple. And you can do this with a 14-day risk-free trial. Super simple. And if you don't like it, you just cancel anytime. It's not complicated. At a minimum, you can take a look and see what information of yours is out there lurking on the web right now. Use the link down below in the description or go to aurora.com/afterburn and you get 14 days risk-free, cancel anytime, super easy, and take the first step in protecting yourself out there on the interwebs. That's the good news, by the way.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.